coming in to be able to host him and have a share here. So we jumped at it. He's the silver Rosh Kollel now in LA. And what's the official name?
Jack
and Giddy Nagel.
Everyone can contribute a piece of it, yeah?
Yeah. Very good. Cool, okay. So,
is it a big graph? Something to graph?
There's definitely a lot of names going around, yeah.
There's something with graph.
There's a lot of good fundraising that went on to start it. Baruch Hashem, we're so good to have him. A lot of us heard him on a weekly basis before, and then many people hear his shiurim now since he's left us, but we're so good to have him back here, so.
Okay, and do you know the Hebrew name? You don't know, but it doesn't matter.
I don't know.
Okay, but we're dedicating the learning tonight. It's Terry's grandfather's Yahrzeit is coming up very soon. I think it might even be the day of Purim.
Yeah.
So that's this. Yeah. Oh, so I might have the name somewhere. Anyways, we're dedicating the learning to Terry Karasik's grandfather, who's also the Silver's. Everyone's mishpacha, basically. So my title, Silver Family Rosh Kollel. I guess my grandfather is a Yahrzeit in that way. Okay. So, and just in terms of naming rights, everyone should know, since it did say on the bottom of the flyer that, you know, if you want to make donations, you can. So I'm willing to name anything. So literally, next child that I have, you got naming rights, you know, the back house of my house, literally anything is up for grabs. So you can do that. It's a schuss to be back at Yitzi's house. I've been here a lot of times, always for learning. So it's special to be back. And, there are some new faces here, which is nice also, but especially nice to, get together again. It's more, for me, it's more of a reunion than a shiur. I don't even plan on, saying a whole shiur, maybe just a Dvar Torah and a shmooze, but it's nice to get together. And we have in mind also Refuah Shlema 4. Tzivileya. Bas Chava Mina. So the learning that we do should be a zechus for Refuah Shlema for her as well. But just to schmooze and get together and see everyone, it's nice. People who don't know me, I never lived in Bergenfield. I lived in Washington Heights, but I used to come here every week and we would learn together in the shul. And I just moved to Los Angeles a few months ago. It was part of a kol that just started there. So it's, you know, it's being recorded, so we'll tell you what to think about it after. But it's very, very nice. But you miss your home base, you miss your family and the friends that are made along the way. So it's nice to get back together. One of the thoughts that I had that I was thinking about it with Purim upcoming is it's not a compelling question that's going to make you wonder what the answer is. It's not a question you've never heard before. It's not something that's going to keep you on the edge of your seat. But it's something that I think is good food for thought. And something I think bears for us a very important message in terms of Purim, in terms of really all of Torah and Mitzvos, and in terms of the times we live in, the specific challenges that we face as a community, I think the message is very poignant and relevant. So if you bear with me through the question and the Makoros we'll try to address it with, so you'll see hopefully that it's a relevant idea. So we're coming up on Purim in a couple of days. And Purim is a confusing holiday in the following sense. When you walk into, again, I don't know what your Purim home looks like. I know what modern Orthodox Purim is basically just driving forever with people's Shalav Manos. Fine. So, okay. So, but I haven't yet moved into a regular, you know, community. I lived in yeshiva the last 10 years. So Purim for me, truth is I can't describe it for you. I don't really remember it. But it's a little more Labor Day. It's a little bit more stuff going on in the home. So the way Purim is al pi halacha is it's a wonderful holiday where we celebrate the salvation of the Jewish people from a terrible threat of Amalek. And we celebrate by eating a tremendous suda and drinking more than the usual amount to the point where people are drunk ad lo yada. And there's shalach manos going around and more food being spread and matanz lavyonim. It's a very gashmi holiday, very physical. If you would walk into a regular Purim Suda, the way the Shulchan Aruch describes it, you would see a lot of people doing only Megushim Dik things. You would see people only being involved in physicality, only being involved in eating and drinking and having a great time with their friends. And then it's interesting, because when you read the Maror Makomos, the most famous ones, for example, with the famously from the Arizal, that Yom Kippurim is called Yom Kippur, because it's Kippurim, it's like Purim. It's on the loftiest of levels. Yom Kippur is the holiest day we can imagine. And what does he choose to compare it to? Again, the words connoted, but it's still strange. Purim, it's like Purim. The difference couldn't be more stark. The contrast couldn't be more real. And yet, they're compared to each other. The holiest day of the year and this day where we're eating and drinking and being merry all day, it's a very strange comparison. And then additionally, you have, again, Yom Kippur and Purim. Yom Kippur is the day where we receive the Luchos. It's a day of Matan Torah, much like Shavuos, another side of the coin of Matan Torah. And Purim is a day of Kimu V'Kiblu, Kimu Mashle Kiblu Kvar. It's a day of Kabbalah Satorah as well. I don't know about you, I haven't gotten much learning done on Purim in a couple of years. It's either you're drunk, or you're, again, driving Shalach Monasteries, but there's not so much time unless you're listening to Y.E. Torah in the car. So you're not getting so much done in terms of learning on Purim. So it's a day of Kabbalah Satorah. How does the physicality of drinking and eating, how does it match up with Purim is like Yom Kippur, and Purim is a day of Kabbalah Satorah? Very, very difficult to wrap your head around those concepts. Like I said, not a question that makes you think, oh, I never thought of that before. That's an obvious thing to think about. But I want to share one perspective that I think will add a dimension, hopefully. So the truth is, when you think about Yom Kippur, what makes Yom Kippur so holy? What makes Yom Kippur so holy, aside from the fact that it's a day of kapara, which is the definition of the day, which is the nature of the day, in terms of our actions, what makes Yom Kippur so holy is literally the exact opposite. Right? On Yom Kippur, we abstain from everything physical. And we literally leave this world like malachim. We dress up like malachim. We act like malachim. We don't eat. We don't. We abstain from all types of hanas in this world. We totally, totally transcend, totally divorce ourselves from all the pleasures of this world. And that, we understand, is holy. That we see is something which is spiritual, is something which is ruchni, which is a day of, you could see why it's related to Matan Torah. It's something where you relate to some other world outside of our own, outside of this world of Gashmias. So we understand that. And that's Kippur. And Purim is on the same level, and they're similar, but they're literally polar opposites. So in order to try to gain a little understanding, I'll think about the following. It's always like this with Purim. I don't know if it's supposed to be a coincidence. I'm sure Moshe Tzvi, as Mar Makom said, it's not a coincidence. But the Purim lines up always with the parshas of the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. This week, Parshas Tetzaveh is usually Parshas Zachor, unless it's Ibriar. It always lines up with the parshios of Truma Tetzaveh, Kisisa, Ve'akal, Pekudeh, building the Beis HaMikdash. So Rav Pinkus, in one of his Svarim, has such a beautiful idea. So simple, not simplistic, simple. So simple in his way, but it really taps into an idea about the Beis HaMikdash that's important to notice. So we're talking about Yom Kippur being the holiest time of the year. So what's the holiest place in the world? So this, I know Rav Moshe Tzvi likes to say from the Chafetz Chaim. You like to think that the holiest time of year is Yom Kippur. You know what I'm talking about? Yom Kippur. And the holiest place in the world is the Beis HaMikdash. And the holiest person is the Kohen Gadol. Really, the holiest place in the world is right here. The holiest person is you. And the holiest moment is right now. Okay, that is true. That's one side of it. That is always an opportunity to tap into Kedusha. But in a normal sense, a basic sense, the holiest place in the entire world is the Beis HaMikdash. Is the Beis HaMikdash. So Rav Pinkus points out, it's interesting. The Beis HaMikdash is a spiritual place that's otherworldly, right? And what happens when you walk in? What's the first thing you observe when you walk into the Beis HaMikdash? You look down, and there's blood flowing across the whole floor. And there's barefoot Kohanim running around in the blood, and the blood is spritzing all over. And you see, what's this blood from? Is there Rachman Azlan? What's going on over here? And then you see, oh, it's animals. They're slicing animals everywhere, Kohanim. And what are they doing with them? They're barbecuing them, and they're eating from the barbecue, and they're enjoying themselves. And like the Gemara tells us, they're adding mustard, and they're adding whatever condiments they need to the given carbon that allows for it. They're enjoying Gishmaka meal. And carbon after carbon, barbecue after barbecue. And then what's that smell? What's that air freshener? This Ketores is gorgeous. And the you look around and you see what's described in Truma, Tetzaveh, Kisisa, Vayakal Pekudei. You see the garments the Kohanim are wearing. You see the gold and the silver. You see unbelievable sight. It's Megushim Dik. No, it's like the most beautiful mansion with the most glorious barbecue going on. It's an amazing sight of physicality. And then you ask someone, where am I? And they say, you're in the holiest place in the world, where we somehow connect to the Ribono Shalom, even though we're living in a physical world. Where somehow we have these nisim that the Mishnayos described to us that take place, that people are experiencing all day and all night in the Beis HaMikdash. It's an otherworldly experience, and yet it's taking place all through Gashmias, through barbecues, through gold and silver and amazing garments. How does it all go together? So Rav Pinkus says an amazing thing. He says, really, the Beis HaMikdash is not from this world. The Beis HaMikdash is a different world. It's a world of Ruchnius. It's a world of Olam Haba. It's a world of the upper worlds of the Hashpaos that we're supposed to make going up and the Hashpaos that are supposed to be made going down. It's something we can't relate to. It's something we can't really tap into. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to relate to that through Avoda, through relating to Him, through being in a Beis HaMikdash, it wouldn't work. We can't. We can't tap into that type of Kedusha. We can't reach that level. It's too high. It's too far removed. It's too esoteric. It's too lofty. We couldn't possibly reach that. So the only way HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to bridge the gap, he says, he calls it a sulam, a ladder. The only way he had to bridge the gap, kiviyachol, between us and the worlds that he wants us to tap into, is to give us a Beis HaMikdash that was extremely beautiful and extremely physical and extremely wondrous in a way that we would perceive the godless. We would see how elegant the Beis HaMikdash was. We would taste how tasty the karbanos are. And only through the ability to bridge the gap and see that it relates to our world, that it's part of our world, so then a person can start to take the steps towards the goal of all that gashmius, which is the ruchnius. They can take the steps to see what the avoda was for, what the karbon was for, what the beautiful kalim were for. They could take those steps towards ruchnius. But a person couldn't possibly have done that without tapping into the gashmius because it's too far removed. It's not from our world. It's alien to our existence. So the Beis HaMikdash, by definition, had to be, if it was going to be the holiest, loftiest place in the world, then ironically, by design, it also had to be the most megushamdik, the most beautiful, the most enjoyable, the most pleasurable place to be in the entire world. Fascinating insight by Rav Pinkus. In all of life, in Ruchnius, it's from a different world. We don't relate to it. We wake up in the morning, we have feelings that are physical. And we go to sleep at night with feelings that are physical. And everything that takes place in between, making our living, taking care of our children, enjoying our meals, everything that takes place in between is physical. We know there's some goal, there's some orientation we're supposed to have that's out there, that's a higher level, that's more esoteric, that's above us, that's beyond us. It is very, very difficult to go through daily living and connect to some world that doesn't exist in front of us. That's not right in front of us, like the meat is in front of me right here. The world of Ruchnius doesn't exist in front of me in the same way. It's not tangible. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu realizes that. Now, he gives us portals. He gives us ladders. He gives us bridges that are supposed to bring us from this world to the next world. But we don't always find them. We sometimes miss the cues because we're so involved and so engrossed in everything going on in this world that it's hard to notice the road signs. It's hard to notice when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a key, gives us the ability to move on to a different world, to tap into Ruchnius, to go a little bit higher. Tell me if you relate to the following experience. I think I might have mentioned it in a recording I sent to the group before Yom Kippur. Tell me if you relate to the following experience. If you don't, maybe try to relate to it next time. Yom Kippur. So Yom Kippur night starts pretty regular. I'm usually a little anxious. I'm not a big long time in shul, you know, sit there for a long time. It's very, you know, I get backaches. It's not so easy. And I'm anxious the first night of Yom Kippur, fine. The beginning of Yom Kippur, fine. The morning is, stomach's growling. I don't daven so loud because I don't want the guy next to me to smell your breath. And it's maybe a better davening. I'm dressed up for it. I'm in the moment a little bit, but it's a regular davening with a little bit more kavana potentially. And the day goes on, and I slowly usually feel this, I'm not sure how to describe it other than a separation of myself from myself. Tell me if you're relating to this or not, your head. But you sort of feel like you're leaving your body. And by the time you're standing there in Ne'ilah, whether you had the most inspiring davening, whether you didn't have the most inspiring davening, by the time you're holding by Ne'ilah already, so you're so hungry that you're not hungry anymore, and you're so, you know, caught up, and you're so physically exhausted, and you're so caught up in the davening, and you're so, you know, maybe you're even enraptured by the Baal Yitzvila, so you're so caught up in it that you've left yourself. And at some point during Ne'ilah, I often find myself watching myself daven. Almost like an out-of-body experience. I also, by the way, take acid before Yom Kippur. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. And if you guys haven't experienced it, that could help. But, you know, with that, you stand there on Yom Kippur, Ne'ilah time, and you're looking at yourself, and you're like, I see so clearly who I am and who I'm not. All of the gashmius was left behind. It was stripped away over 24 long hours. And I'm sitting here by Ne'ilah. I feel different. I feel like something else. I feel like I'm outside of my body. And it's an amazing thing, and it is intuitive, which the next step we're going to take is not intuitive. It is intuitive. If a person is made up of physicality and spirituality, and we could assume either one is the ikkar, we'll assume, let's say, spirituality is the ikkar, that's the main thing in our life. So we're always shaded by, we're always, clouded, our perspective is clouded by the physicality. We spend 24 hours stripping away all of the eating and all of the hana, all the pleasure of this world. So what we're left with is the basics. We're left with what is our spiritual makeup. So it makes sense that we have that experience. That, to me, is a strong point of Yom Kippur. And it starts to relate back to what we were talking about before. Because our lives are so hectic and so filled with gashmius and so filled with physicality and so many focuses and so many distractions that it's really hard to tap into that other world, that other self, that core self of a person. So we take one day during the year, we strip it all away, all of the physicality, and we're left with nothing but that spiritual self. That's Yom Kippur. It's like the Beis HaMikdash. But it's not really like the Beis HaMikdash, right? Because the Beis HaMikdash did all of that with what? With the beauty, with the grandeur, with the karbanos. So it's not quite like the Beis HaMikdash. So what's that mahalach? What's that root? So now let's come to Purim. Again, you have to think about Purim al pi halacha, or a Purim, hopefully you're able to be mekayim towards the end of the day of Purim, if you've already done the Shalach Manos roots. You have to think of Purim in its core, not necessarily the way we relate to it when we're driving around and doing our errands. Purim at its core is what we described before. In action, it's physicality. In action, it's drinking, it's eating, it's sharing a suda with a lot of friends. It's very, very physical. It's very base. Very, very base. But as a person leans into that physicality, as a person starts to indulge in the suda, as a person gets to the fourth and the fifth cup of wine, what starts to happen? What starts to happen? I don't know. To me, it always feels pretty similar to ne'ilah. You start to observe yourself differently. The Chazal tells us, nichnas yayin yatzah sod. Wine comes in, so sod, which I think loosely translated means vomit, but also can mean secrets, the sod of the nefesh, right? The esotericism that's buried deep within us, that starts to pour forth. I don't learn Kabbalah during the year publicly, and I don't have so much nistar in me, I don't have so much sod in me, so what does that mean on Purim, that sod secrets come out? What secrets do I have to share? So you know what secrets come out. It's the same reason people don't drink their first year in Israel, and maybe the second year they do drink. Because they have a lot of things they don't say usually, because their guard is up, and they're trying to be mature, and they're trying to be adult, and they're trying to keep things, hidden. And when you drink, the barriers go down. And yatsa sod, the pnimius, the inside of a person, the definition of a person, what a person really, really is, comes out. So when a person's in a stage of life where they're not proud of what's inside, they try to avoid letting down their barriers. But at a stage in life where a person's more confident, and believes in what's inside of them, and feels they have what to share, but it's often guarded. So on Purim, what happens is something very beautiful. You come to anyone; everyone's welcome to come to Los Angeles. We're going to host a Suda. Sam is planning on coming, actually. We're going to host a Suda. And he said he would pay for, I don't remember if it was half flights or... Okay, we'll talk about the details afterwards. But people are invited to come to our Suda. So you'll see what happens halfway through the Suda is people who don't usually say Divrei Torah are saying Divrei Torah. And people who don't usually sing, I don't usually sing, but on Purim, I sing. And sometimes we FaceTime our wives, uncles, and say things that we wouldn't say during the year to them. It's normal. I think that's normal. And you get into this place of nichnas yayin yatzah sod, because your barriers are down, you've let your guard down, and you're able to let out what's really there all along. It's not a fake you. That's the real you. The other you, rightfully, has boundaries and borders and barriers that are keeping a lot of that sod in. But on Purim, when we get into the Gashmias, when we get into the Suda, we leave our body. And we exist, again, in that state of hovering over ourselves and watching as we perform what we really, our neshamas, have been wanting to perform all year round. It's not Yom Kippur. It's physicality. It's gashmius. It's drinking. It's eating. But the result ends up being the same. Isn't that amazing? The result ends up being that the same way that Yom Kippur, we abstain from food and all of the pleasures, and on Purim, we indulge in all of those pleasures and more, and yet the result is nichnas yayin yatzah sod. Nichnas Yom Kippur, Yatzah Sod. But it always ends with the maskana of Yatzah Sod. That we end up with this out-of-body, otherworldly experience where we're able to be ourselves, our true selves, stripped away of everything else. There are two routes to that. One is to strip away the Gashmias, and apparently another one is to lean so heavily into the Gashmias that a person's barriers are broken down, everything is removed, and we're stripped down to our basics of who our neshama really is. The Beis HaMikdash represented the perfect balance. The Beis HaMikdash was a place where the physicality was the spirituality, and the spirituality was the physicality, and that bridge was very clear. That ladder that Rav Pinkus was describing was very obvious. But you can't live in a Beis HaMikdash all year round, and you can't live on Yom Kippur all year round, and you can't live on Purim all year round. So what the Ribbono Shel Olam did, Bechasto, Betuva Bechasto, is he gave us times of years and places within those years, within our lives, where we're able to tap into the Ruchnius through those different avenues, either through stripping it all away and coming back to our spirituality, or on Purim, engaging in this physicality in such a way that it leads us into this other state of Nichnas Yayin Yatzah Sod. The result is the same. The process is different, but the result is the same. It's the same goal. It's the same goal. So Purim is Yom Kippur? No, it's not like Yom Kippur. the Maisa HaMitzvah, the Maisas of the Yom, is not like Yom Kippur. They're very, very different. But it is Yom Kippurim, in the sense that we have the ability, through the Mitzvahs HaYom, in one sense physical, in one case spiritual, but through the Mitzvahs HaYom, we're able to reach that place of Nichnas, whatever, Yatzah Sod. We're able to get that out-of-body experience, that ability to hover above this world, and attach ourselves to something higher than we live for every other day of the year. And Purim and Yom Kippur don't represent what we do the rest of the year, but the Beis HaMikdash does. And if on Purim a person can lean into it and come out with that experience and tap into what it means to feel, while in this world, feel like they're somewhere else. And if on Yom Kippur, the other end of the bookend, a person can tap into that experience and feel what it means to leave this world and experience another world, then that's a perspective which can inform the rest of our year. Not with drinking and not with fasting, with living like a Beis HaMikdash, with going through physicality and using it as a portal, as a bridge, to bring us to spirituality. We mentioned in the beginning that Yom Kippur and Purim are both considered days of Matan Torah. It's such a strange thing. Matan Torah is, we understand Yom Kippur, it's Kulo Ruchni. Torah is something else entirely, it's all Kedusha. Purim, why is that a day of Kabbalah Torah? So Nefesh HaChaim writes in Shar Dalet of Nefesh HaChaim, that's the famous Shar. We're in our Kol, we're learning Nefesh HaChaim. We have a Machshava Seder for 3 times a week for a half hour at the end of the morning Seder of Machshava Seder. Open for sponsorship, by the way. We could easily rename the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim, whatever your name is, if you want, no problem. So in the Nefesh HaChaim Seder, we started in Shar Aleph, where it happens to be our Kol, now is on Shar Dalet. Shar Dalet is the one people usually start with. It's the same way people skip to the end of Nefesh HaChaim the same way people only do the beginning of Mesilas Yesharim. You know, it's the only part of the book anyone ever learns. So in Shaar Dalet, a whole Shaar Dalet is about Talmud Torah. So he develops a beautiful theme there with a lot of Zohars and a lot of Marmakomos, but the point that he develops is as follows. He says, Torah is not in this world. Torah does not belong in our world. Torah exists not even in Shamayim. It exists way, way, way beyond our grasp, way above the sky. It exists in Olamos that we can't imagine. It's way too holy to be contained in this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to access those worlds, and what he did was unbelievable. Through chain after chain and demotion after demotion, he was able to compartmentalize. It's another act of Tzimtzum. He was able to compartmentalize and make the Torah in such a way that it was applicable, relatable, and brought down to our world. What Torah becomes then is, again, a portal into another world. It's the Olamos HaElyonim, the highest of all worlds, and it's stuck in our world. The Sfas Emes writes, it was in last week's Parsha, that's why I know it, in Parsha's Truma, he writes that the Pasuk in Tehillim refers to Torah in three ways. One of them is as a Shevi, as a prisoner. What does it mean, Torah is a prisoner? So he writes, such a beautiful Lashon, you should look it up in Parsha's Truma, he writes that Torah is a prisoner in the sense that Torah does not want to be in our world. It wants to exist on a higher plane. It's way too holy for us. It's way too esoteric for us. It's way too high up for us. It's so removed from this world, and yet it's imprisoned. HaKadosh Baruch Hu boxed it in into our world because we need to utilize it. But it's a captive. It's a Shevi. It's a prisoner in our world. That's what Nefesh HaChaim is saying also. The Torah doesn't start in our world. It starts somewhere else. Our accessing Torah is now a portal into that other world. Soloveitchik writes about this in the beginning of Isha Halacha. He writes about people think of Halacha as a response, you know, the same way, why do we have traffic lights? We have traffic lights because if people are driving this way and people are driving that way, imagine even it's a community where they have lights on the streets. It doesn't have to be here. And they're driving in two different directions. So if there's no traffic lights, what's going to happen? People are going to bump into each other. So what do you have to do? You have to have traffic lights. And if nobody gets tickets for running lights, no one's going to listen. So we have tickets for those lights. Everything is a response. Right, all of law, all of secular law, all of civil law is a response to what exists in reality in our world. Halacha, Rav Soloveitchik says, is not a response. Halacha exists inherently in a different world. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave that world to us through halacha. But it's not that the halacha is responding to human realities or human nature. Halacha was placed into our lives from a different reality entirely, a reality of halacha. It's a different world, Talmud Torah. It's something else entirely. And when a person sits down to engage with Dvar Hashem through a shir, through a little Shnai Mikra, through a Daf Yomi, through learning with a Chavrusa Night Seder, when a person taps in to Divrei Torah, what they're doing is they're building themselves another bridge. They're finding another way to ascend and transcend this world and leave this world, literally, experience that out-of-body, out-of-world experience through the act of Talmud Torah. Yom Kippur is a time where we leave this world. Yom Kippur is a time of Matan Torah. Purim is also a portal to the other worlds. Purim is also a time of Matan Torah. It's also a time where Limra Torah is again, it's revitalized. It's Kima B'Kiblu. It's reaccepted. But we see through that acceptance that this is another time in our life, and therefore every single day when we have a chance to engage with Dvar Hashem, multiple more times that we have in our lives, to ascend, to transcend this world. So Yom Kippur is Kula Ruchni, and Yom Kippur is Matan Torah. Because we ascend and transcend on Yom Kippur. And Purim is Kulo Gashmi, but also a time to ascend and transcend, and therefore it's also a time of Matan Torah. And it's important to reflect on that, because first of all, it informs the day of Purim, it informs us how to celebrate the day of Purim, how to think about the day of Purim. It also gives us the perspective on how to live our lives in general, how to view every mitzvah, every relationship, every food we eat as a portal into something deeper, as an opportunity. If we only reflect on it once a day, how much would that help us to realize this is an access point to a different world? This is a gesher, this is a bridge, this is a sulam, a ladder that leads us somewhere higher. But it's also important for the following reason, and we'll end with this. What I'm about to say is obvious and should be obvious to everyone, but somehow we've lost touch with it. It also happens to be that my Rebbe chazered it a few weeks ago, so you might have heard it. There was a recording going around online, so if any of the words sound like they're borrowed from him, it's because they probably are. We live in a world where truth, and absolute values don't match up with the subjective morality and values of the world we live in. The Torah isn't relatable to the society's moral, in quotation marks, morality. The Torah's ethics need to be defended. We need to try to find a way to make Torah relatable to the current generation. And there are mechanechim in the room, but even if you're not a mechanech, everyone's a mechanech for their family, and even if you're not a mechanech for your family, you're a mechanech for yourself on this. We spend a lot of our effort, I feel this way in my job, we spend a lot of our effort defending Torah. And trying to show people that, no, really Torah does relate to our world. Really Torah does belong in this world. Really Torah is something that's accessible and something that's relevant and something that's in line with what you're experiencing in this world. Now, there is truth to those arguments, but that is not the truthful argument. The truthful argument is that Torah is an alien in our world. Torah does not exist in our world. Kadosh Baruch Hu did a chesed for us and brought the Torah down so that we could learn it. And we could use it, and we could lay our lives al pi Torah, but it does not belong in this world. And when a person realizes that, they realize that our job as Obdei Hashem, our job as parents, our job as teachers, our job as community members, is not to try to defend how Torah fits into our world, but it's to show people that they have a chance to use Torah to elevate out of this world. It's a chance to use the Torah as a bridge, as a ladder, to leave the world that we are tethered to. The Torah is concise and compact in such a way that we can get it, we can hold on to it, we can relate to it. And if you hold on for dear life, the Torah will take you up levels. It will help you transcend. It will help you ascend out of this world. But not because the Torah is this world, but because the Torah is our path to the higher realm that we're supposed to live on. All of mitzvahs that way, Talmud Torah especially, but it's not something we have to defend and try to force into this world's misplaced and misguided understanding of how the world's supposed to be. Torah is the ultimate reality, and it's an alien. It's a Chevy, it's a prisoner, it's a captive in our world. But it's an opportunity, it's a bridge, it's a sulam, it's a ladder to the place we're really supposed to be, to the Nichnas Yayin Yatzah Sod. So we should take the opportunity through these Divrei Torah, and we should take the opportunity over the next couple days preparing for Purim, and on Purim itself as we lean into the physicality, to realize that the Matan Torah of Purim is a Matan Torah that's supposed to help us ascend, help us get out of the schmutz of the world that we live in, to transcend the gashmius that we live in. But it doesn't have to be through Yom Kippur. It also can be through Yom Kippur. But it can also be through a Purim. It can also be through celebrating, through enjoying, through getting involved in this world. And if you do it to the point in the proper way that your sod comes out, you have to hold on to that sod. You have to observe it very well on Purim. And you have to try to grab hold of the sod, grab hold of that Torah, that's the day of Matan Torah, and let it carry you into the upper worlds. I thank you all very much for coming. It's such a wonderful zchus to share the Divrei Torah, to learn together, to be together. Happy to stick around a little bit more afterwards, but it was really a pleasure, and I appreciate seeing everyone. Yeshikayach.
Right.